Welcome to the WBFO Press Pass. I'm Mark Scott, and if I'm here hosting this, then it means my friend Elizabeth Licata is here, too.
I am here.
How are you?
I'm great, Mark. How are you?
Good. Elizabeth, editor of Buffalo Spree. As usual, the magazine sharing stories of some hidden gems of our region. In the November issue, Elizabeth writes about the old stone chimney in Niagara Falls.
Now, yes.
You tell us that this is one of just two structures from the
old structures.
18th century that
yes.
survives in our region.
Yes, the other one is, of course, on the campus of Old Fort Niagara. But this, there was also a fort here. It was a wooden fort, but the chimney was like probably the most permanent part of it.
And this is in Niagara Falls itself.
Yes, you would barely see it as you went along the Robert Moses. It was, the land changed hands that it was on, and though they tried, they did save it and move it in the early 20th century. People just forgot about it, except for a small band of preservationists and historians in Niagara Falls who have been keeping an eye on it and advocating it for it to be moved to a more prominent site so people could see it and its history could be interpreted.
And this is happening now?
Yes, it is. Well, you know, there's a lot happening up there now, because now when you go along the Robert Moses, you'll notice it stops and it's, you know, part of it's being removed. So with those efforts going on, this is an ideal time to also move the old stone chimney, which is right at that border where they're removing the rest of the parkway, and then they'll move it to a more prominent place as they add more parkland and more green space where before there had been roadway. And so then they'll have a sign and everything. I don't know exactly where it's going to go. When I went to see it, it was almost taken down.
Yeah. Now, is dismantling the chimney and then rebuilding it elsewhere, does that allow it to retain its label as an authentic structure from the 1700s?
I believe so. It's very careful. It's been already been done. So, I mean, if that makes it inauthentic, it's not been authentic since 1915 or so.
Yeah. Okay.
So it was first moved then, but no, I think they are very careful to make sure that it's put back together exactly as it was. Now, it's not like the pergola, say, on the Darwin Martin campus, where that was actually torn down, destroyed, and they've rebuilt it with new materials. Well, obviously, that is not an authentic historic structure, but the chimney still is.
And this reminds me of the old Bank of Buffalo building on Main Street. It was dismantled, I think, in the 1980s, and its bricks are numbered, and it's just waiting for the time to put it back together again. And I don't know if you're aware of that. I recall this story, and it's stored somewhere. The bricks are numbered. The dome that used to be up there might have been preserved, and they're I don't know. I think somebody has to pay for it. But
it gets confusing,
yeah,
Mark,
yeah.
Because you know there are bank remnants scattered all over
yeah.
Western New York.
Yeah.
There is some on the UB North campus. There is some near me on Franklin. There's some that are used down at Wilkeson Point. There's some at Main and Allen in the like a little pocket park that's there. They're all
yeah.
over the place.
Yeah. Continuing on with the topic of preservation, Buffalo Spree writer Barry Muscat profiled real estate developer Don Gilbert, who has restored five historic structures in Allentown into residential units. Tell us about these historic buildings.
Well, Don, it's really past due that Don was recognized for this, because some of them were restored many decades ago. He's one of the first people to really reinvest in Allentown after it sort of fell into kind of disrepute in around the 60s or
mm-hmm.
so, and you had a lot of boarding houses and so on. And but Don restored first, I believe his first one may have been apartment building on Franklin. There is the Bishop Manor on Franklin. There is sort of a house with an apartment with it on Franklin. There's an apartment building on North Pearl that's one of the newer structures, like from 1905 on North Pearl on my block. And then finally, there's this amazing former Union Hall that no one would have ever thought would become a residential structure. I never could have predicted.
And it's relatively new. 1964
oh, sure.
it was built. And believe me, if that building could talk,
some
of
yes.
the stories, because Local 210 was quite notorious.
Notorious. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we did a story about some of those union scandals back some time ago.
Yeah.
But they moved out, and then a jewelry company moved in. I remember when that happened because that was after we moved to North Pearl Street, and it was just this fortress. I mean, it looks like nothing other than a fortress. Although some people, it has a very similar shape to the destroyed Frank Lloyd Wright building in the hydraulics, the former administrative Larkin administrative building. But Don saw potential and has put windows in it, which it never had. And beautiful units. He always does a great job. He's a very good landlord. His restorations are meticulous. But his apartments are not, they're not at the high end. You know, they're affordable for grad students and young interns, and he really has a lot of tenants who work on the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus.
I was going to ask, no shortage of tenants with more and more jobs coming
in.
Oh,
yes. Yeah, it's people are looking for good apartments that are well-maintained, and that is what Don does. But the buildings themselves are beautiful, and they're all in all different styles.
It was so interesting to read that this was just a hobby for him, and it became his passion, and now he owns five historic buildings in Allentown.
Yeah, well, he's had a lot of different careers. He's had a sports career. He's worked in radio, as you know. And then he worked for Benderson for a while. But now he just takes care of his buildings. I don't know if this will be his last one or not.
Yeah. When I started reading the article and saw his name, I said, gee, I wonder if that was the Buffalo Bills color analyst from the 1980s. And sure enough, it was.
It was, yeah.
As I continued on with the article, yeah. So he's doing some great things there. Also on the November issue, Elizabeth, you wrote about an initiative at SEPA that's patterned after something we talked about on this program a while back, community-supported agriculture.
Yes.
You buy shares from local farms and get produce in return. So now one can buy shares from participating artists.
Yes. This is something that benefits the artists. They make money. SEPA makes money. And then you get a very reasonably priced suite of, I believe it's around 9 artworks. Which for the price is not bad. So it's not the same as like onions and tomatoes and so on. It's a little more expensive than that. But it is patterned on that, and other art organizations have been doing it throughout the country. And I also wrote about another art subscription program that is like when you pay for something like Birchbox or Blue Apron to come to your house, a box of food or a box of cosmetics, once a week or once a month. And with this art subscription program, you pay for however many months you want, and you get you indicate what artist you're interested in, but the artwork that you get will be somewhat of a surprise, just like this CSA program.
Yeah.
And the art subscription program is more of a for-profit program, but it also benefits artists. And we need people to realize that we have a lot of wonderful artists in this area. It is possible to buy their work, and it's affordable. And it's much nicer to have an original piece of artwork, often by a local artist, on your walls than something that you might have picked up at, I don't know, Target.
I was reading in your article that sometimes sales don't take place because the person attending the gallery doesn't realize it's for sale, and there's not a lot of high-pressure sales tactics there.
So I think maybe sometimes people who work in galleries are perhaps too subtle for their own good. But, and plus, the nonprofit ones, you can't really be too obvious about trying to sell things, but you can buy artwork from a nonprofit, and that nonprofit can take as much as 20-25%, and it's perfectly legal under all the funding laws. People don't realize this. They're intimidated when they go into galleries. They don't understand that artwork is that they're welcome there. A lot of people don't even think they're welcome at art openings. They think there's something for the privileged few, and that's just not the case.
We usually spend much of our time in our monthly conversations here talking about the Buffalo Spree cover story. In November, it's all about soup, but we're holding off because this time you're planning a separate report that will air soon on WBFO about soup. So for now, I really can't help this, so forgive me. No soup for you.
Actually, we think soup is so important that I just can't talk about it in the midst of a bunch of other things. And it deserves its own segment. And also, we would like to have a soup maker as part of that conversation, one of the chefs who make the wonderful soups.
And you, let's use this opportunity to announce a change at Buffalo Spree, a new food writer who will be doing this.
Well, Wendy Gildswearingen is actually now our new senior editor. She is also editor of our senior paper, Forever Young, but she has been immensely helpful to me just in the short couple, months since she has sort of taken over Krista Glennie-Seyshu's senior editor position. But she won't really, Krista's kind of irreplaceable.
Yeah.
She's such a food maven. We all know this about her. So I don't expect Wendy to be her.
Okay.
I just expect Wendy to be as helpful to me as Krista was. And so far she really has been. And she's a great person and a very good writer.
But Wendy will be doing this feature about soup.
She will be doing this feature about soup because she does do food writing for us.
Elizabeth, thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark.
Elizabeth Licata is editor of Buffalo Spree. Mark Scott, WBFO News.